Hi, I'm Josh. I was born in poverty-laden Flint, Michigan to a blue-collar working family. I went from pulling weeds, washing dishes, and delivering pizzas to building a small business doing over $150,000 a month. I sold it and moved to Costa Rica with my wife and four kids. And on this podcast, we explore the secrets and the strategies that I used to win. Building your business is one of the hardest things you will ever do. So let me finally help you automate, grow, and someday sell your company.
Hey guys, Chris Martinez coming at you live on the Quick Talk Podcast with my good friend Joshua Latimer taking over as host. Josh, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. This is such a weird backwards feeling. It's backwards day.
It is. I'm going to take off my Josh voice. I know I'm monotone, but I was trying to do the intro like you, man, and hopefully people got it. But, I wanted to do this interview with you because we talk so much about success in our business and look at kind of what we do and look at this. And I want to talk today about failures because I feel like this is really important topic, especially when you're getting started in business. You know, when you start to hear all the success stories and, you know, $1 million companies or $100,000 a month companies or $20,000 a month companies, it can really get discouraging if you're only doing $400 in a day. You know, and so I want to kind of go over, make this all about our failures and how we fell forward to succeed. So if you don't mind, Josh, we're going to get personal on this, man. We're going to get nitty gritty. Do you mind?
Nope. I think it's very good and it's important because I always interview these people that have like so much success. It seems impossible when you're starting out. And you said $400 a day. Are you kidding? I would have died to have $400 a week in the beginning. Like that's right. Even a huge goal to some people. So I think it'll be cool. I'm ready.
It's awesome, man. Good deal. So, man, you know, I'm not going to introduce you at all because I mean, this is your podcast. People already know who you are. They already know your story, but I do want to kind of break apart your story a little bit. I want to, you know, go into the first year of your business, kind of one of the scariest parts of most people's business. When you're getting, you know, started, you're excited, you have your goals and man, we're going to just crush it. And then that first month comes by and it's like, oh my gosh, I'm so far behind. I'm never going to catch up. And so, you know, real quick, man, can you go through that first month you went from a banker, correct, to a window cleaner?
Yes.
Can you give us that transition? Did you have money saved up? Did you have to take a loan out from family and friends? You know, walk us through the last day as a banker going into the first day as a business owner in a window cleaning business.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I don't tell people, just because it can be confusing, but this is a good opportunity to explain, is that technically I started my business at two different points. And what happened was I started my business out before I was a banker for like a season and a half. And I was very young. I was in my early 20s. I built up to about 200 customers. I had, you know, the ladder on my car, the 1993 Chevy Cavalier with a 28-foot ladder on it. And I did all that. And I got up to about 206 customers, I think it was. I know it was because that number sticks in my head. And I'll tell you why in a second. And then I got these opportunities to go into mortgages and to do mortgage sales. And I did very, very well at that for over a year, then got recruited over to Chase Bank and then did that for like a year and a half or so. And that's kind of where you get to the point where I started my company, Birds Beware, window cleaning in Michigan, kind of for real, quote unquote. And the first time around, I just knew nothing. I had no systems. I had nothing. And I just wasn't taking it that serious. But if you fast forward to when I was working at JPMorgan Chase, my wife got pregnant and it was kind of, that was like my trigger moment where I realized, all right, you know, I'm 25 years old. I really want to do this for real. I had 200 customers from a few years ago. I'm just going to do this. I'm going to go for it. And that was kind of the point. We did not have very much money saved. Really, we had bought a new house and we had bills and we had baby coming and had a little bit of debt going on. I had a Home Depot credit card, you know, for my landscaping wall in the front yard. And then I had, you know, some car payments and some credit card debt and stuff. So we didn't have a lot. You know, I was only 25, young, married, not managing my finances at a high level by any stretch of the imagination. But I had enough to get going. And it only took you know, I think that the first truck I bought for my business was $1,600. And it was a used Chevy S10. And it was, I mean, I remember when I bought it praying on the way home from buying it, like, Lord, please let this truck make it home. Like, oh, I was really hoping. And the funny thing is that truck has almost 300,000 miles on it today. And it's uglier than sin, but it's actually still at the Birds Beware place and it runs still. Like, it's been amazing. But no, that's kind of the transition from banker. So I left there, I bought that junky truck and kind of went at it. And I don't want to ramble on too long, but the last important point is that I thought for sure, Chris, that I had 200 customers to lean into to start this thing off and to fire up the machine. And so I sent a letter out to all 206 of them, this heartfelt, passionate letter. You know, I'm going back into business. I'm back. You know, hire me. Give me money. give me money. And I guess how many customers I got out of that. You won't believe me. I got six. And it was one of the most discouraging, terrifying things ever. I mean, I literally wanted to throw up. We had no money. We had no savings. And that's kind of where I'll leave it.
Yeah, let's stop right there. Because, man, you said some stuff. And this is where I really want to focus on because, you know, people don't hear these stories. They hear the $150,000 a month. But what some of the things you just said. You know, I think a lot of people think that they have to go into business. You know, I started my business. You see the van today and saw it wrapped up, but I didn't have that van. I had like a 1996 Ford F-150. This thing was beat up. I think it had like 200 and something thousand miles on it. And that's what I started with. And you said you started, you know, with the little $1,600 truck and you didn't go into business with 200 customers like you thought. So let's talk about that for a little bit. Let's talk about like the false, you know, the false excitement you have when you first get into business. You know what I mean? Like when you first get in, like when you said, I'm going to send out this 206 letters, I'm sure in your head, you thought I'm going to get 206 replies back and you got six. As a small business owner getting started, like how would you recommend to the new guy when he gets started, they send out 10,000 mailings and only get 3 phone calls. How do you fight that discouragement? How do you put that into like, you know what, man, we're going to kill it next time. Like, you know what? It's just persistence. Let's keep going. How did you get past that in your first year in business?
Well, it was really hard the first year. Now looking back at it now, it's so clear the mistakes I made. It's so obvious what I should have done, but you know, living in it in the moment, it was a lot of fear. I was freaking out. You know, I didn't want to be a failure and a loser. You know, I had a lot of ego and pride back then. I probably still have some of it. I don't want to have that. I want nothing to do with that. I don't think I'm special at all. But back at that time, if I'm honest, yeah, I thought I was really smart. I thought I was invincible. You know, I thought I could do whatever I wanted. I really underestimated what it was going to take to do it right. I mean, wildly underestimated. And when I work with people today, they do the same thing. They say, oh, you know, I did door hangers. That didn't work, but they ordered 500. No, you need to order 50,000, you know,
like that's right.
We do just enough to fail. And I did that too. Now, the advantage that I had though, was that I was really, really, really serious about trying to make this work. And so I had a lot of massive action. I mean, that first year, I was doing a lot of the wrong things, but I left my house when it was dark and I came home when it was dark, like all the time. Like I worked and worked and worked and worked and worked and worked as hard as I could, doing a lot of the wrong things, but putting the effort out there. You know, one of the best places to start for any business is friends and family and influences in the community. Like you have to let people know, hey, I'm in business. This is what I do. I'm excited about it. Like I want to serve you. Like, do you know anybody? And then you have to be repetitious in it. It has to be like a broken record. You have to keep telling the narrative and the story. And so the first year, Chris, I only did 24,000 in total revenue. That's before, you know, buying that truck and wrapping that truck and ladders and equipment that I bought. We barely made it, barely. I remember one time a stranger left a basket of groceries on our front porch. And for someone who had pride, thought he was a hotshot, which I wasn't. And I feel embarrassed that I even felt that way. That was a humbling thing, man. I mean, humbling. You know, my wife's debit card has declined. I tell that story at the grocery store. She calls me crying, has my baby with her, my first son. Just, I felt like an utter failure. I was embarrassed. I went through all of those things. I didn't have all the answers. But you know what? Pain is an excellent teacher. I knew I wasn't going to, you know, give up and walk away. And I, you know, kept educating myself. I kept praying, you know, as a way to make you pray a little more when you're about to starve to death. And, you know, little by little, things started to fall into place.
This is great. You said your first year you made $24,000. Do you remember, did you put a sales goal your first year? Like, hey, I want to make X amount of dollars this year. Did you fall short of that sales goal, or it was 24,000 pretty much it?
I don't remember if I had a sales goal, honestly, but I'm leaning towards I definitely didn't. I mean, I can't imagine that I would have, because I was in survival mode. And really, part of my problem, Chris, was that I had a scarcity mentality. I really was having this, like, I have to get enough money to survive mentality, rather than I'm going to build a company that's spectacular. And when I had you on as a guest on my podcast, you talked about, you know, that fear. When you have fear, your customers can feel it. They can smell it. And people don't want to, like, be around people like that. And so when you're desperate, it's very obvious. And I was that guy the first year, even the first year and a half, really. I did make my first employee hire in year two and started getting some more legs and momentum, building my confidence a little bit. But that first year, man, it was humbling. I took a beating. It was hard. And, you know, you can look back on it and kind of laugh, but, you know, I don't want to live that again. I don't prefer it. but that's what kind of laid the foundation for what became a really successful company.
Awesome. Well, let's transition. When you just said you hired your first employee the next year. So year number two, we got through year number one, $24,000, bunch of bruises, scrapes on our knees, falling down. And then year number two, what was the point? Like, where did you go from, okay, man, it sucks, to I need another employee? Like, what was there, the 28th month, the 30th month? Where was that in? What was your revenue when you decided you needed another employee?
My revenue was crap still, because I had just come off that $24,000 year. And in Michigan, it's a seasonal business. We have like 9 months to make all of our money. So really, it was 24,000 in 9 months, essentially. That winter, in fact, I delivered pizzas, okay? I took part-time jobs. Like, I can't remember everything I did. I was shoveling snow. I was doing whatever, because I didn't have any money. I couldn't work.
Let's stop, right? Man, that's awesome, man, because this is what people need to hear. I'm seeing so many times, man, so many people get so frustrated. You do not have to quit. You may have to take a part-time job. You may have to get a nighttime job. But what you just said, man, I think a lot of people need to get through their head. It's not going to be easy. And you may have to take that. Would you say, Josh, that it's not a total failure if you have to take on some part-time work to accomplish your dream to be a business owner?
Oh, of course not. I mean, most of this stems from an ego problem. And for me too, man, look, I was on this banking job. I was like, I won a sales MVP award. I was like getting recognized at regional meetings for the bank. I had my securities licenses. I really thought I was really smart and awesome. I wasn't, but I thought I was. And so going into cleaning windows, I was excited about it. And I tell people, and they're like, oh, isn't that what homeless people do? Like, oh, good for you. Like, they'd almost look at me like, oh, you poor thing, you're a window cleaner, you know? And so I was battling that, you know, being embarrassed by almost my own business in the beginning, in a way. And I was also battling having to go get a job in the winter. And then my friends and family looking at me like, Josh, what are you doing? You know, you're a loser. Like, I felt they were thinking that. They probably weren't thinking that, but I felt like they were, you know, and projecting that. And it was all ego. But you know what? You know, when you have a wife that you love and a kid, thank God, you know, I was able to fight through that and just get it done. But it was discouraging. And every winter I'd be thinking, God, am I going to really do this again? And I did. And so after delivering pizzas for several months, I figured, you know, this sucks. I definitely want to do windows again, but how can I improve? How can I grow from where I went last year? So I decided to hire an employee. And, you know, I prayed about it. I'm like, God, you know, I don't even know how to hire an employee. I don't know anything about this. You know, please send me like an employee. I kid you not, the very week that I prayed that prayer, I got a call for somebody that wanted to be my first employee. That guy ended up being with us for like 7 years at our company. He was never late a day in his life. And he was one of the best employees we had. And And that catapulted me to be able to focus more on sales and not just, you know, living in fear and doing everything myself. And I'll tell you another thing. When you get your first employee that's solid, you realize how much awesomer it is to have a team than when you were doing everything yourself. Like, you won't ever want to do a job alone again. At least I didn't. It was so much better having him around. And it held me more accountable because I had to show up at the right time to give him a schedule. I had to make sure he had his paycheck. I was responsible for someone else. And so year two, I had a ton of personal growth, you know, at a basic level, learning how to cast vision for that guy. And there was just a lot there, a lot of mistakes still, but a lot of growth.
Awesome. So we're talking failures with Joshua Latimer, and we got into the subject of employees. So let's keep that subject going. Epic failures with employees. What's the biggest failure you've had with an employee? Not necessarily having to fire them or them not showing up, but you falling short as a leader. Like, not necessarily we just couldn't pay them, but where have you failed as a boss to your employees? Even if it is a payroll thing, where can you say you have failed at?
I think communication, and this is almost, well, I can't say almost always, but I hear this a lot. Communication, like if I was to go interview the employees of all the people listening to this podcast, if I could go talk to your employees about you as a leader, I would put money on the fact that they don't feel communicated to nearly at the level that you think you're communicating to them. And, you know, there's this whole mismanagement of expectations, and it happens with our customers and us where they, I thought the service included this. And you're like, no, you're an idiot. Obviously it only includes this, right? Well, that there's a disconnect. The same thing happens with your team. And, you know, there's 1,000 mistakes I made with communication, you know, telling them, oh, we're going to do this. And yeah, you can have the weekend off. Oh, no, you can't. And yeah, I can give you a raise. Oh, yeah, we're going to have to hold back on that. Oh, yeah, we're going to conquer the world. Oh, we didn't. We made a huge fail. Oh, yeah, we get paid on Fridays. Let's wait till Saturday. Let's wait till Monday. You know, all these things. Most of them are easily fixable through clear communication, through opening up various ways to communicate and creating what I call a feedback loop. And so it's really important that your staff has a way to be heard from by you, okay? Not in a way where they tell you what you want to hear. One of the ways I handled this was by having anonymous surveys that they're required to fill out, where it literally would give them the opportunity to criticize the model, the how we were doing business, and be brutally honest with no fear of repercussion whatsoever, because it was really important, you know, just their schedule. You know, in the early days, I would write there, like they'd come to my house and I'd sit on this little plastic Little Tykes picnic table that 4-year-olds eat at, right? At a picnic. And I'd sit with like a clipboard and like hand write out addresses and where they had to go to work, right? What a mess. And I didn't understand at that time how stressful that is to someone working at a job and how low level that feels to someone who's like, wow, yeah, I'm really going to have a career at this guy's company. Yeah, right. As he's at his Little Tykes table, like just rolled out of bed. Like, you know, I didn't have that professional leadership style yet. And when I eventually pivoted hard into that, it caused some friction and pushback because the people that had been with me were accustomed to kind of shooting from the hip. They were accustomed to doing it this way. They don't want to change, right? So the new guys coming in, they were cool. They didn't know any different, but the old guys would give resistance. And that's one of the things that holds people back from doing real systems. They think their employees will just argue with them and say, that's stupid. We're not going to ask for referrals. That's not my job, blah, blah, blah. And that can be a tricky thing to navigate. How would you like to hang out with me for a whole week? I'm talking every single day for 7 days. Well, you can. You need to join my 7-day challenge. It's completely free. It's a ton of fun. Every single day, you get a special message with a short video from me firing you up to get rocking and kick your butt into gear for your business. Just send a text message, 7-day, to 44222. You got to spell it out, SEVENDAY. Text it to 44222, or you can find a link at automategrowsell.com.
Dealing with employees again, let's keep this going. Was there ever a time in your career as a business owner that you were afraid you could not pay payroll? I know there's a lot of us out there. I mean, Especially the more work you start to do, you know, $20,000, $30,000 a month. And let's say we've actually had to put systems in place in our business to keep people paying us. That way we never get in trouble. There was a time last year where about 70, 80% of our revenue was uncollected, and we still had payroll to pay and all the other bills. Was there ever a time in your business where you were like, oh my gosh, payroll's due, I don't know what to do?
Oh man, do you want me to just speak of a couple good ones, or the 800 times I felt like that?
Man, because just give us a couple good ones, man. You know, this whole subject is all about failures and how we overcome them. So even give us a couple good ones, how you overcame them, not just with, you know, doing the job, but mentally. Like, how do we mentally as an entrepreneur overcome that?
I'll tell you one thing right off the bat. For anybody that's married out there, our wives, or if you're a female and your husband's supporting you in your business, our spouses are like the unsung heroes of most successful entrepreneurial ventures, because they put up with so much crap. So they are our therapist, they're our friend, they're our shoulder to cry on, they're our advisor. I mean, I didn't have anybody else. My wife isn't a business person. She's extremely intelligent. Has a lot of, you know, intuition and things, which I used to not value as much as I do now. But I'll tell you what, man, like when with payroll issues and everything, I did my best, and I think this is good, to never look weak, financially weak, to my staff, because it creates a lot of uncertainty and fear for them with their job. But behind the scenes, Chris, I was freaking out all kinds of times, because the problem is when you start to succeed and scale, like you said, is that it unlocks another realm of issues that you did not even know were a thing. And managing cash is one of those things. When you're small time and you're doing everything yourself with a helper, a couple helpers, and you're getting paid a check every time, that's one thing, okay? And that has some challenges. When you're doing, you know, $20,000 jobs for hotel chains that pay you in 45 days, or doing work for the big three automakers like we started doing, and getting, you know, getting 50, 60, 70,000 in accounts receivable, right? Like money owed to us, and I have 15 people that need to get a paycheck, and I don't have the money, but they need the money. That is a very stressful thing. And you're right, there's systems you can put in place. There's actually pretty simple ways to overcome a lot of this. But I didn't know any of that stuff. Like, I had no clue what to do. So the long and short of it is that there were many, many, many times when I didn't get a paycheck. There were many, many, many times when everybody barely got their paycheck. I mean, barely. I mean, by the minute of the deposit clearing to cover to the penny. And I think that's normal. It's natural. You know, for some, you know, Harvard grad MBA superstar that has a startup in Silicon Valley, maybe that's not normal for them. But for blue collar business owners, like people in the service industry trying to make it and trying to hustle, I think it's part of the game. And the way that you overcome it is through education, through systems, and through, you know, thinking about these things before they blow up in your face, which isn't easy. Like, it's not, you know, pain is the very best teacher on the planet. And so if you experience this a couple times for yourself, you'll be motivated to find a solution. And you will if you stick with it. But it's not smooth. It's not. And us getting to, you know, the month we sold at $186,000 in revenue that month, that is not the whole story. And that's why when you asked me if you could do this, I'm like, that's awesome, because I don't want to convey to people that I have, you know, every guru answer on the planet. I don't, but I've been through it all. I've completed the cycle. I went through the pain. I got to moderate success. We got to big success. We had a layer of leadership. Everything was systemized. I eventually got to all that. But payroll and finance and growth and all that stuff was a burden for quite some time before I ever got there.
Two more questions for you, and we'll wrap this up. Was there ever a point in your career, and I already know the answer to this, but I want people to hear this, that you just said, that's it, I quit, no more, I'm done? Obviously, we know you didn't quit, but was there ever a point where you were just so frustrated and that you're just, that's it, I'm throwing in the towel?
I wish my wife was here right now, because yes, definitely. I tried to quit all kinds of times. I was done 100 times, Chris. I'm like, I'm done. That's it. This is stupid. I'll just deliver pizza again. I'll go back to the bank. I'll do something else. But she would talk me off the ledge every time. She's like, no, yes, Josh, you're overreacting. You know how wives are. You have a wife like my wife. Like, she's awesome. And thank God she talked me off the ledge. You know, I wanted out so many times, Chris. It can be an overwhelming thing. I think the way to combat that feeling is to make sure that you're surrounded by like-minded people. You know, in the early days, I didn't have anybody mentoring me, pouring into me. I didn't have any framework. I really didn't know what to do. And being in business as a lone ranger all by yourself is really hard. And it's always hard, but it's really hard if you're by yourself. It's much less hard if you have some frameworks to follow and you have some encouragement of your peers. I didn't really have that until later. And, you know, after I understood how powerful it was, I started to seek it out. You know, like you need, like you say, you're the copycat entrepreneur. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. You need to just get around people that have done it, that can encourage you, that can give you a little faith, because I just didn't know if the thing was going to work many times along the way.
Right. Yep, that's right. Les Brown has a story of a CEO he tells about, and that the CEO hired one of his friends to help him. And early on in the days, he fires his friend. And when he's asked, why did you fire? He's your friend. He said, well, he kept telling me I can't do it. I already don't believe in myself. I don't need someone else not to believe in me. And he fired him, you know?
Wow.
And so the last question for you, Josh, I know we just asked, has there ever been a time where you felt like quitting? Now, here's the question on the opposite. Was there a time where you didn't want to quit, but you just thought you were about to go out of business? Like, I think this is it.
Probably when we started to grow too fast, I thought maybe I would make an irreversible mistake. You know, when you have a small team of maybe, because year three for me, Chris, our business tripled. And that was the year when I realized, oh my God, I can work on my business instead of in my business. You know, that Michael Gerber E-Myth concept, which is really simple when you think about it. I actually started to execute on those things. I started to create space for myself. I literally would not go out in the field and I would literally build systems. I would start documenting how we did things, how we can make it better. I started learning about perceived value. But during that rapid growth, not having any kind of financial mechanisms in place or any kind of sophisticated accounting to really even know what I was doing to myself, when you have to pay for your scale, you have to buy new trucks, hire more humans, put uniforms on the humans, train the humans, do all this stuff, right? And then people aren't paying you. You're selling commercial accounts. They pay you in 30 to 45 days. That kind of all converged. And there was many times where I thought I would make a mistake that I couldn't get out of. You know, if you don't pay your people, and most of the people that work as laborers in service companies are living paycheck to paycheck, you really screw them bad.
Yeah.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal. And I'll tell you, the first time you do that, their eyeballs are looking for another job the next day. I mean, I don't care if they're your best employee. Employees want security. That's why they're employees. You know, I like how Tony Robbins says the measure of your success is proportionate to the amount of uncertainty you're comfortable living with, right? Like as an entrepreneur, the name of the game is uncertainty. You can build a plan all you want, but it's never going to play out exactly like you think. But for an employee, someone who just wants a job, they need their paycheck on Friday.
That's right.
And there's a few times where I really didn't think I could make it, but just by the grace of God, we did or whatever. But I had a lot of fear that things would collapse and implode on themselves for sure, because you know it's expensive to scale a business. And you're running a little bit different. In fact, if I could go back in time, Chris, I would take your model. I would take the way higher prices, profitable, lean, small team model any day of the week. And I didn't do that. In the market we were in Michigan, I didn't do that. In fact, for the first really 3 years, our prices were really low. And I didn't know any better. I just didn't know. And so there wasn't enough meat in the jobs to really float the growth the way that I needed it to. But we came out of that. We ended up, you know, our average ticket from year one was like $36 or something. And, you know, by the time we're done, it was like $500. And in Flint, the Genesee County, Michigan, where Flint is located, that's like a really high average ticket. And we're by far the most expensive in the area later. But for years, we weren't. And it caused some severe strain.
So let's recap this. I mean, we talked a little bit at the beginning, discouraged, you were discouraged. And one of the things you said was that that's when you just massive action. That's when you just go all out, massive action. We talked a little bit about employee problems. You said some things about, you know, better communication. And the last one here we talked about was, you know, when you just feel like throwing in the towel and quitting. not quitting and putting in learning systems and keep learning. The real reason I wanted to do all this, Josh, is because I want people to know the struggle is real. And I know that's a cliche thing to say, oh, the struggle is real, you know, but if you're a business owner and you're looking to be successful, it's not going to be easy. And I think that sometimes, you know, and I'm guilty of this. I'll put out my Facebook Live videos and I'll be like, hey, it's easy. You just got to do it, you know? And, but the truth and the reality of it is I have failed and failed and failed, and you have failed and failed and failed. And, you know, we can name all the gurus out there. They have failed, and Tony Robbins and all of these people that are great, what they do. We all fail, but it feels good sometimes just to hear the gurus, the Josh Latimer say, hey, look, man, it hasn't always been peachy. There's been bumps in the road. You know, it's not always clean. It's sometimes dirty. It's filthy. It's nitty gritty. And sometimes you got to get your hands dirty. And man, I really appreciate the stories, man, because there's a lot of guys that need to hear what you just said, because we all want to aim at where you are. We want to be a company that has $150,000 in revenue. But we also need to learn and understand that there's going to be failures along the way. So I really appreciate you allowing me to do this, interview you. If there's one thing that you can tell the guy that's failing right now, that wants to throw in the towel, that wants to say, that's it, I quit, I can't be like Chris, I can't be like Josh, this is impossible, what would be that one thing you tell that business owner?
Well, I have a lot to tell that business owner, and it'll be one spiel, but definitely a couple different key points. Number one, when I started, if I could have found a way to make $500 a week, that's all I was after. I lived in fear. I had a scarcity mentality, and I created my own pain by giving myself just enough to fail, just enough to almost make it for the first year and a half. I really did. It didn't need to be that way. I didn't know any better. The other thing is that hard work and grit and perseverance can overcome a lot. And you do not have to be a rocket scientist to succeed in these businesses at all. You have to be relentless. And one of my favorite words ever is relentless. Okay. You can overcome the intelligence gap, or not having every answer, or being high level executive mind with KPIs and margins and gross and net profit and COGS and all these financial terms. Don't get in the weeds on that stuff. Focus on yourself, on your mindset. Focus on being relentless, getting up and going to work every day. You're going to have pain and suffering. There's going to be mistakes. It's okay. It's okay. You know, it's easy to look at how we did 150 plus thousand a month in revenue. It's easy to look at that and say, oh, look how lucky he is. Oh, look at what that guy has. It's so easy. And I find myself doing it. There's people that I aspire to, you know, with my software company to get to, that are doing 10 or 25 million in revenue in their software businesses. And I say, oh gosh, you know, well, he just had the right connection. No, he didn't. No, almost never is that true. Sometimes it is, but almost never. And everyone sees the wine, which is the end result, the brand new, shiny, awesome, polished family photo with the nice house and the car, right? Everybody sees the wine, but no one sees the crushing of the grapes. The last thing I'll say, sorry, I'm passionate.
You're good, man.
The last thing I'll say is that the last 10% of almost any project takes the same amount of effort as the first 90%. And so a lot of you are so much closer than you think to turning the corner, getting over the hump, and having everything work. Maybe you're stuck at a couple hundred thousand a year in revenue, or 300,000 or 400,000. Those can be very difficult spots to be in, and you can be exhausted, and you want to walk away. A lot of people quit their businesses during that middle stage. I want to encourage you to remember that the last 10% is as much effort as the first 90, and if you push through a little bit longer, everything can change and flip for you. Everything can change and flip for you very quickly. So just keep on keeping on, my friends. And Chris, thank you for doing this. It's really cool.
Josh, thank you so much for allowing me. Will you give the people your plug for the Automate, Grow, Sell Bootcamp? So those people that are wanting to take their business to the next level, how can they link up with you and you help them take their business to the next level?
Yeah. And actually, going into the new year, we're going to do a relaunch of the bootcamp. I'm very excited about it because we've learned a lot. I've had the bootcamp in existence for really our first year, most of 2016. Many of the people in the bootcamp have doubled or tripled their business. Some of the people haven't fully engaged in the material because they got overwhelmed. There's so much teaching and content in there that some people are like, oh my gosh, where do I start? So what we're doing this year is we're gonna take the bootcamp and disassemble it, and we're gonna break it into different modules and chunks that drip out kind of every week. So it's more of a steady bite-sized chunk. That's one thing we learned this year. And the people that have the most success are the ones that do a little bit every week, a little bit every week. They implement a little bit every week. That's how you crush it. It's in the details. The devil's in the details. The other thing is that we're going to have more accountability. So we're going to do a better job of breaking people in the bootcamp into accountability groups with similarly sized businesses. You know, there's people in there with million-dollar companies that have their operations manager go through the bootcamp. And then there's people with like $20,000 businesses that just started that don't even know where to start. So because we have such an array, we're going to leverage our own community to make the bootcamp even better. You know, this isn't some get-rich-quick thing. This is a real tried-and-true framework, roadmap to give you exact clarity and the personal help you need to actually win, to actually get what you want. And whatever that is the right answer for you. You know, no business is built alike, nor should it be. But I'm excited about that, Chris. I know that you're in there too. You contribute right. A ton. You are doing so well. You've come so far so fast. And a lot of the guys have. And it's not about Josh. It's about that community of knowledge, a private mastermind group, all that stuff. I think is a tremendously powerful value to people that do join the bootcamp.
Well, awesome, man. Well, that's my time with you, Josh. I appreciate you getting real and dirty with us, telling us the failures. And you guys out there, don't be afraid to fail forward. You guys have a great day. And what's the link? AutomateGrowSell.com, Josh? Is that where they get it?
Yep. You can go to AutomateGrowSell.com/bootcamp. Really, you can just go to AutomateGrowSell.com and click to learn more. And all the info's there.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, buddy. And we'll be talking to you again.
Thanks, Chris.
Hey, thanks for hanging out, friends. And from all of us here at the Quick Talk Podcast team, we hope you love today's show. We hope that you were inspired to become a doer and not just a listener. Apply what you've heard today in your own business and watch things change for the better. Lastly, remember that all the money in the world can't save your soul. Seek first the kingdom of God, my friends. We'll see you next time.
For more information about the Quick Talk Podcast or Joshua's other businesses, visit our website, quicktalkpodcast.com. Have a blessed day.